Today, my guest is Anne Wilson, also known as the Wealth Chef. Coming up, a step-by-step guide in becoming financially free.
You're financially free when you have assets at an average rate of return can pay for your chosen lifestyle.
Making money work for you.
So now we start exploring what do I want, and then come up with a price tag of that lifestyle and get your freedom number locked in. That, as you say, that first number, because now you can make a plan.
What are the different ways of investing and knowing which ones are the best for you?
You do need to have a range of assets. You know, is that proverbial, never have one egg. Most people don't have felt they have the one egg, let alone multiple eggs in multiple baskets. I love the stock market. I have assets in all asset classes. There's actually 8 broad asset classes that I recommend people should be in.
Anne, it's a pleasure to have you on my show today and all the way from South Africa. And hello, welcome to my show.
It is such a pleasure to be here, to get down and dirty. Let's talk about money. And I'm really excited.
I am super excited. And you know, when I've started following you, and you do something that not many people do, and that is you make money fun and exciting. And, you know, and having watched a lot of your videos, listened to you on your podcast, yeah, there is a vibrancy, and it makes me excited to want to invest and to sort of learn more. But before we get started, Anne, I always ask my guests if they could give me a little bit of background to who you are and how you got to the point you are at today.
Oh, the long or the short version. Well, let's keep it tight and go, because absolutely. You know, money weaves through every aspect of our lives. Yet it's something that we're can be so told that it's either dirty, or it shouldn't be there, or it mustn't be greedy, or it's scary. There's so much charge around it. And so I think bringing an energy of fun and delight and actually going, hey, what if this is just an amazing ingredient that we can learn to use to create our amazing life? But absolutely, I didn't start there. Now, I grew up in a very, let's say, working class towards middle class family, where the message was study hard, get a good job, and then you'd be okay. So my entire exposure was work hard for money. That was the sequence. And it was from you working. And then any other money conversations were all very confusing. You know, we definitely wanted it, but you mustn't want it too much, because then that was greedy. It was like, shit, how do you navigate these elements? It doesn't grow on trees, which of course is a lie, since it's not paper. But there's also this aspect of if you want it too much. So I'm number 5 of 6 kids. So there were a lot of mouths to feed. There were lots of bodies to be clothed. So there was also this aspect of wanting anything came at sacrifice, you know, being greedy, that, you know, dad worked so hard, don't you understand, kind of thing, what it cost, what the sacrifice it meant to have money. So this conflicting relationship with wanting stuff, but what does it mean to have it? Is money good, bad? You need it, but you don't talk about it. Work hard for it. So pretty much confused, like I think many people grow up with these messages. And then my dad died when he was relatively young. And I watched my mum. Now, she had always been the one looking after the kids and making sure that they, you know, didn't kill each other. Now having to, she managed, you know, the budget, the which many women do, the day-to-day aspect, but the longer term financial well-being, suddenly she was in this position of who did she trust? How much was enough? The small pot that she had been left, you know, hoping that she would run out before the money did. And when I looked up, I realized that so many women were in this position. I said, I never want to be in that place. I never want to be so vulnerable. I never want to be in with this level of anxiety. But I turned to the only thing I knew, which was, well, go and get a good job, you know, study hard. So I studied civil engineering, not because I gave a shit about how a piece of steel bent, because that's what men seem to do. And they seem to have this money stuff sorted. But again, that was the smoke and mirror. You know, I know that you come out of the city and that environment, and there's Now that having worked with thousands and thousands of men and women all over the world, really diving into what does it create, what does it really mean to be wealthy versus rich? How do we manage our money? How do we get close and intimate with it? Being able to have communities or places where you can have clean money conversations is so rare. And so you'll have a lot of people in the finance world that earn a lot of money, but it's full of charge and shame and guilt that you're meant to know. So there can either be this machismo swagger or complete denial, you know, we just don't talk about it. It's just, so these camps, so much for men knowing, you know, and again, why would they? Because nobody pops out the womb knowing this stuff. It's a complete human created concept. So it's a learned thing. And so I, you know, navigated on my path. I went into debt. I tried to work hard. And then I found myself in my early 30s. I was working on a big project in Hong Kong. I picked up a liability in the form of a husband about that stage. And there was a lot of it. I was doing everything, like trying to save that one day I could live the life I wanted. And everything was about what I couldn't do. It was about self-deprivation. The only way I felt to be safe was how little could I need, and then maybe I'd be okay. But as we all know, suppression, not actually allowing life force and eros and just juiciness to ooze and flow, it's going to blow up in a big, messy money drama, which it did. So the marriage and the money walked out the door. And I went, shit, you know, after I got off my pity party, went, maybe it's not just because I'm blonde or a woman. Maybe there's just something I've never been exposed to. You know, I've tried to do the right thing. And that's when I went, there's somewhere in between the earning, the spending and the saving that if I truly, and that's when I slowed down and went, what does wealth mean? What actually is great? And I'd heard about investments, but I'd never been taught it. I mean, by this stage, I had a degree in civil engineering. I had an MBA. I had, you know, wasn't lack of education, but I'd never been taught how to actually make money work for me. And so that started this amazing journey. And it took me 8 years of just diving in, understanding investments, learning while still being a salaried employee to get financially free, and then continued on. And then the point was, I've created this amazing freedom for myself, freedom of choice, freedom of purpose. What do I really want to do? And I looked around, and that same fear and anxiety I'd seen on my mother, the same that I'd felt all over, was really went, hey, I would love to support people in getting into right relationship with their money, getting them in their life. And that was the birth of the Wealth Shift some 12 odd years ago.
Wow. I mean, and there is so much there that I had a little goosebumps over. And I think, you know, you having the realization and understanding where sort of your attitude around money comes from. And I think not many people really think about money in the same light. And I think a lot of people look at money as almost, they become a slave to money.
Yeah.
Rather than use money as a tool. And something that you said when you were describing the beginnings of your journey and how we are actually taught various different things about money. I mean, I grew up to the expression, you know, money is the root of all evil, or money doesn't grow on trees. And that was one that my mother hammered home to me. And it's sort of a similar situation. I was brought up with divorced parents. So my father left my mum to bring myself and my brother up. So we were very much always taught, you know, learn what money is and in terms of, you know, be careful of it. Where do you think this taboo comes from, or how do you think we get this money mindset?
I think there's lots of interwoven elements. And I think, you know, we can go into these layers, because I think just intergenerationally, but also as women, there's a whole another set of layers. And so I think there has been, money is power. Let's just, money is access to opportunity. Money is choice. And so there is a deep power about it. There's a big deep politicization of it. I mean, in reality, the concept of money was just something that we created to be efficient and to not have to barter. You know, if you're selling shoes and I've got rice, but your shoes don't fit, like, shit, money is a bit more convenient than having to find, you know, the person that wants my rice. But it became and is this aspect of liberation, of independence. And so being able to keep people economically dependent in relationships, intergenerationally, societally, is very, very convenient. So I'm veering off on slightly more existential elements, but let's talk about debt. Debt is a huge aspect of keeping people in servitude. It is modern day slavery. So if we can feed, and there's this huge machine that wants people in debt. The banks actually have a term, they're sort of the useful delinquent spender. They want people to be slightly delinquent on their spend. That means they don't quite repay. Because it actually, that's where you make the most money. If they just pay enough, keep it going. Debt is power. Debt controls elements. So there's a massive aspect of then weaving off. So, I mean, we can go right back, but our relationship with consumption and identity became more and more around dominion over, control over, possession, ownership, which is pretty much why where the world is where it's at. Now, that doesn't mean money is the root of all evil. Money is like tofu. It's a fantastic protein, but it's tasteless. We've got to put the flavor in, you know?
I totally agree with you on tofu, by the way.
You know, money, it's an amazing magnifier because it is this lever, but it's us humans that are then our relationship with power, our relationship with consumption, our confusion that, well, the hedonic trait that if we have, you know, if one bathroom makes us feel wonderful, we're going to have the wonderful bubble bath, well, then surely four in the home must be better. You know, we don't know how to differentiate actually where we get our vitality from. So we have this dysfunction that veers off. So our relationship with power, our relationship with choice. And then there's also been an aspect of outsourcing that responsibility, because if you truly want to be wealthy, if you truly want to get money working for you, we have to claim back our agency. You cannot be a victim and be wealthy. You have to choose.
I'm a great believer in life of you are the CEO of, I say, mind, body, and your money. And if you can be free in those areas, no one can own you. You own. And you know, we are all in control of our own life and our own destiny. That said, I do think our system, particularly our education system, governments, as you say, do try and we're taught to sort of almost become poor.
To comply, because now if you can keep people needing to work, needing to be in that industrial side. So absolutely, you know, I'm sounding like this conspiracy theories, but our financial industry, if you see where it evolved from the evolution of the of funds that came out of post-Second World War, the creation of the pension scheme, it's an entire industry that makes its money on keeping people believing it's scary and keeping them ignorant. So you have these actively managed funds. There's a reason when you get off the aeroplane, all of the billboards are your fund houses, your banks. They make a shitload of money off everybody else and you don't make much. So the average person doesn't make that money. Then you've got your entire industry want people to be in debt. And then the working element is you need this army of people who feel, who believe they don't have choice.
And believe, and this is one of the when I realized this, which actually was only over really the last sort of 10 years, we are taught that working hard makes you rich. Yeah. You know, time, you know, put in the time, you know, trading this time, trading your soul will give you money.
And here's the challenge, you know, I, coming from Africa, and I've lived in six countries on five continents all over, I believe the opportunity to work is a privilege, the opportunity to be able to express ourselves, to give value, but we want to be able to have the choice of how we do it. So I'm not the, hey, the aim of the freedom game is to go and sip your daiquiris. I do think as our humans, we need to contribute, have that expression of that, and the privilege of being able to be in an economy where we can do that freely and fairly is deeply important. And so we are our number one asset. And most people start off with that. The ability to exchange our creativity, our time, and our energy is great to create businesses, to do this, to pitch up and share and teach and grow. But if that's all we have, then we're devastated. So if we get sick, the money stops. If some, you know, if somebody else, if we want to be with a dying parent, we can't. If we want to go off and say yes to an opportunity, and that's a devastation. And that's why we have to start bringing in these other asset classes. But we have to first keep expanding us. Because as I love it, you say CEO, I say we're the CFO, the chief freedom officer of our life, you know. And because then we can start bringing in assets, and we'll, you know, get to the practicalities. Assets, investments is something that, other than ourselves, that can deliver that value, that it can exchange, deliver value for money, because that's what money is. Money flows to value. So all you're saying is there something else that can deliver that value for me? So be it shares in a company, be it real estate, be it low input businesses, be it residual income streams. So now you've got choice. Now you can still work because you want to. And this is, for me, that key thing. But if you only, you know, talk, and then you come back to that message that then also in order to deserve. So deserve is a word I think should be banned from the English language. You know, because there's also, have I worked hard enough to deserve that? There's being created this relationship that hard work or not, or, you know, I've worked hard, so I deserve to go and spend money as well. It happens on both ends.
And you hear it, I hear myself, even though, you know, I'm on my own journey and having come out of this corporate life of working hard, earning a lot of money, to the last 10 years sort of establishing my own financial and freedom. And luckily I got started whilst I was in work. Yeah. What I'd love to explore a little bit more is that sort of financial freedom point.
Yeah.
Because I think that is the bit of gold dust that everybody needs to understand. It is.
So absolutely, let's get really clear what we're talking. And I think the number one reason why many people just stay in this wifty-wafty place of wouldn't that be nice, is because there's no specificity. And I think we know, if you want to create anything in life, if you want to go on a journey, you've got to know what the hell the there is. But on my own journey, when I was going, oh, I really want to have freedom, I want to do, be able to do more things, but I had no idea what enough was. I didn't even know that there was an enough point. It was like, well, maybe if you accumulate enough. And I had very much a saver mentality, that I had to build up a pile of money, a bit like a pantry, shove it in, and then you feed off that, and then hopefully you run out before the pantry does. So, you know, who knows? But you're financially free when you have assets at an average rate of return can pay for your chosen lifestyle. So recently I was doing a, because someone said, oh, like a magic porridge pot. And I went, what the hell are you talking about? Oh, they go, oh, haven't you heard that story of the magic porridge pot, that there's this porridge pot and every day the pot is full and the family feeds off it and the porridge pot fills up again and there's always this porridge. So your financial freedom is a bit like that, that you've got all these assets that they grow in value and then you feed off the growth. So you've got this base sustaining capital mass that keeps going. So I mentioned that I achieved my financial freedom in 8 years, which meant I got to the point where I had enough assets, these investments, combination of stocks and shares, real estate, businesses that kept growing, kept earning money. And now the rate at which I fed off them, also called the drawdown rate, could pay for my chosen lifestyle. And this is what's so key, Sonia, because a lot of people say, well, how much do I need? You know, is it £1 million? Is it $2 million? Is it $500,000? And I'll go, I haven't a clue. I know what it is for me, but I don't know what it is for you. Because most people miss now this other side. It's to pay for your chosen lifestyle. And this is almost the harder point, because now we have to slow down and go, who the hell am I? What do I really want? Whilst we're churning in the working hard for money, it's so easy to just stay in that, what does Instagram tell me a successful life looks like? What does the magazines tell me? Oh, you should be doing that kind of holiday. You should live in that house. The kids should go to that kind of school. That's what successful is, wealthy. So our definition gets defined by somebody else. Whereas when we actually go, okay, if I don't have to work, if I don't do this, what would I really be doing? it can be really frightening. You know, when I got hit my freedom, I call it freedom agoraphobia. I sort of went, now what? A lot of the reason for the doing, showing up, pitching up. And so there's two big things happen. The excuses, the two most common excuses why people betray themselves and don't live the life they want is, I don't have the time and I don't have the money. Okay? And everyone goes, oh, I know, isn't it a bitch? And everybody, you know, and go, well, now when you've created your freedom, so the assets are doing the working, so you've got the money and the time, because the first thing money buys you, your assets buy you is time. Now you've got to go, okay, so what's my real excuse? Now what's my fear?
And that's when you start looking at yourself.
Yeah.
My journey is slightly similar. I got to the point 10 years ago when I came out of corporate life the first time. I'd had my financial freedom number at the time. Yeah. I wasn't quite where I, because the thing is, it does change. And I think the first thing you need to do is write the sort of initial sort of things.
Exactly. We'll get, yeah, work that out.
But then you realize, wow, okay, I can sort of afford, I can afford to live, I can pay my bills, I can pay my, you know, my living expenses. Okay, I can't go on luxury holidays, but I've got the bare minimums covered without working. Now what? Now what do I do with my life? Yeah. And that to me was the point of really digging deep and trying to work out my purpose. And that's, I think, where the real growth comes from.
And that is so important. So your financial freedom number is the volume of value of assets you need to pay for your lifestyle. So you've got to work out a lifestyle. And I said, if you just take your current lifestyle cost now, yes, you do need to know what it is. And if you don't, well, that's your first step. You've got to get intimate with your money. You've got to know what your choices are costing you. And then you just take the annual amount. So in finance, we always, and money, we always want to just deal with annual amounts. So for a year, and you divide that by 0.08, divide it by 8%. And that will give you a first target point. Basically, that's saying if you feed off, if you draw off your assets at a rate of 8%, it should be self-sustaining. You should be able to get your assets working between 12 and 15% easily. And it really is easy. No, don't look at your bank account. That's, we're not talking about interest. We're talking about assets, investing. They're different things. And now you've got that target number, but what you're defining is so important, because the first thing we have to create, and this is deeply important, there are steps on that journey to freedom. We first have to create safety. As individuals, as humans, we cannot start even exploring what we want if we're not emotionally safe, if we're not physically safe. So the first role of money is safety, to get a roof over our head, shelter, access to opportunity, boom. And so there's these levels. Now, if you even think of the chakras, we've now got that base in place. Now we can start drawing on that power. Now we can start expressing creativity. Want. You can't even think about that if you're not basically safe. So also about going, hey, what are these layers that I'm creating consciously with my money? What is the role of my money? First, it's to make me safe. Next is to enable me to self-express and explore and have a voice, get out of relationships that don't serve, to not be in jobs that where I'm dialing down, thriving. Then we can start getting to actualization. You can't leap there if you don't have that in place.
I love that analogy with chakras. I haven't heard that before. That is absolutely amazing, because it was a journey from, like you say, it was like a level for me of the initial freedom of being able to leave my job. But I was still in stress, because although I could pay the bills every month, I couldn't quite afford to go to that restaurant I used to, or, you know, when my friend said, oh, come out, I'd have to sort of think twice, or I'd be the person that maybe not, you know, was readily buying the rounds where I was used to doing that. And over the 10 years, obviously, I've become more and more financially free. And it's really, it's almost like you say, working up the chakras. And that, I think, is very important, like you say, is covering that first base to be able to do that, and knowing that you've always got that first base, whatever happens.
This is really key, because a lot of the conversation in the personal development world or the business world and the entrepreneurial world is all about the freedom to do what you want, when you want, with whom you want, travel. A lot of it's around either consumption or lifestyle or expression. But you have to also have the freedom from first. You have to have freedom from that oppression, freedom from self-betrayal, freedom from feeling constricted. And so you've also got to do the inner game as well. And this is where it's so important. That's why I do love the chakra layer. We've got to go through and go, oh, where am I not yet free? Emotionally, sexually, do I feel I've got a voice? And you can't even start having a voice if you don't feel that you have some safety. So these are these beautiful layers.
I absolutely love this, and really to tie in that this thing called money is so much more than what we're actually taught to believe. I mean, there's an energetic flow, like people say, like I believe it's
completely.
It's that flow of energy, and when you are in flow, that's when you can really allow it to come in. And let's talk about some sort of practicalities here. So if anyone is listening to this, what would you say are the first stages of sort of growing or getting into assets?
So the first thing is to really get absolutely clear that there's two things that create a wealthy life. And we mentioned before we started, we hit recording, the difference between being wealthy and rich. You know, you can be rich for a moment. You can go and get your credit card. You can go and hire that Ferrari. You can drive up and down the high street, take a whole lot of selfies, put it on Instagram, and whoop, you're rich for a moment. Wealth is not what you can see. It is these assets that can pay for that lifestyle. It is the insurances that if something were to happen to you, it's having your wills in place. A lot of it is not sexy, but it is so freaking deeply sexy because it lets you get on with doing your life. So you need to get clear on just the difference there. So, and then once you're clear on that and go, okay, what the bleep do I really want? And this is a lifetime journey. It really is beautiful, stripping away. But what at its core, and go, is this mine? Or am I believing I need these things in order to be worthy? So a lot of this journey is also how to come back to self. And how do I enable myself to live my life knowing we're all already worthy beyond measure? We were given this gift of life free. There was nothing we needed to do. We didn't have to work hard for it. We didn't have to sacrifice. We were just given it. So what do I want to do as an expression of that life? If I want to go on that holiday, is it from inside of me, or do I feel I have to do that in order to fit in? So now we start exploring, what do I want? And then come up with a price tag of that lifestyle and get your freedom number locked in, that, as you say, that first number, because now you can make a plan. If you don't have that, you can't even start the step of the journey. So is it £500,000? Is it £1 million? Who knows? But you need to work that out, because now you start working out the next thing. Then the key thing is to understand that nobody earns their way to freedom and nobody saves their way to freedom. Because when I first worked out my number, it was like, oh shit, how am I ever going to earn that? You know? Let alone save it and go, oh, hang on. A huge shift that we have to learn. And it is a massive mind shift, because we're taught to think in a linear way. We're taught to think about this trade, this barter exchange for money. We don't understand how compounding works, that you can have this asset. Now you control it or own it. It earns money. That money gets reinvested. It earns. So it literally is an expanding snowball. And I'm sure you're finding that. Now my wealth just keeps growing exponentially, because you're using so many mixed metaphors here, but you plant that tree, and then now, maybe its first few years it has a few fruits, but you let it grow, and then it's this big thing that keeps going. So 90% of our freedom will be created by assets, not by our work. But our job is to create the asset, not to earn the money. And this is the devastation. So many people think it's money that they need, and so they keep chasing the money. And I heard over and over, oh yes, absolutely, I need to start investing, but I'm just going to get my business working. Or when I get that next job, then I'll get to it. So it's this proverbial chasing money, which will keep everybody poor forever.
I'm nodding vigorously here, because I sort of only had that light bulb moment probably about 2 or 3 years ago. I actually felt that I wasn't no longer successful because I wasn't earning this big income. You know, I used to earn a nice wage in the city, had my pension, had my healthcare, this, that, the other, all paid for. And it takes quite a while coming from that lifestyle to not having an income from a salary. I get an income from my assets, but not a salary. Yeah. And I felt a failure. My success, who I was very much tied into my job. And it wasn't till my business coach, and I believe everyone should have a coach, told me, "Do you not see how successful you are? You don't need to work a day in your life, and your assets keep you where you are, you know, keep you going. Yeah. And you have this great lifestyle of being able to do whatever you want to do, and the time and the freedom to do it, which is amazing. But I think that mindset, it was a huge shift in that.
You've covered such a vital thing, because our entire education, what we're taught is that our worthiness is linked with earning the money coming in. Even as people, I'm an entrepreneur, but they'll, you know, I've got a seven-figure business. And I'm going, you're talking about top-line revenue. It's meaningless. But we tout this BS around. And so now we have this created this fixation. And essentially, we are societies that worship at the altar of income. In relationships, the person who earns more is deemed to be the one who then should manage the money. BS. Some people are great at bringing it in. Other people are great at managing and investing it. They have different skill sets, and none of them define our worthiness. But I so love you that you brought this up, because like you, when I had a very successful engineering career, when I worked all over, and I consciously chose to let go of that, but I really had to grapple with this, where's my significance? Where's my worthiness if I'm not getting this Pavlov's dog? Yay, I've got my kick. The world's told me I'm okay.
And I get this salary thing every month, and it goes into my bank accounts, and then everything.
I'm okay, I'm worthy. The world's deemed me worthy. So thank you for bringing this, because this is huge. And it also, believing that that's important keeps people on that slavery train, because now to stop and create assets does require a shift. It is a delayed gratification thing. So it is an effort that now in our businesses, in our world, basically, if we can think assets first in every aspect of our life, we will succeed. And I know you do a lot in the healthcare with our wealth and health. It is doing that work, building the structure, the frame, the muscle that will then last you forever. That's the asset-based thinking versus the, what's that quick pill I can buy that will lose me, you know, that quick hit, that sugar rush, that's the income obsession versus the assets is really going, let me slow down and create some systems and processes in my business so it can run on automation. No, and I'm too busy. I'll get to that, but now I've got to go to earning.
Now it's this time I need to earn the money so I can do this. Yes.
So now, if you know what your asset, what's called your net worth, which is your balance sheet, which is your assets, the value of the assets minus your liabilities. Now you've got a target to go. And this is the most important thing. You've got to have that target. The second step is you have to start creating these assets. No assets, no freedom. It's a law of nature, like fucking gravity. No assets, no freedom. No assets, no freedom. It's just, you're not going to get around it.
How would you know, because there are obviously various different asset classes that we can talk about. Are there any right, I chose a certain asset class at the beginning, and I diversify now. And I did that because it was something that was sort of ingrained with my father was in property. Yeah. And I went to property first. So I started investing in property. Is there any way that you think there is a certain asset class that's right for an individual?
So you do need to have a range of assets. You know, it is that proverbial, never have one egg. Most people only have themselves, they have the one egg, let alone multiple eggs in multiple baskets. I love the stock market. I have assets in all asset classes. There's actually 8 broad asset classes that I recommend people should be in to ultimately get that diversified portfolio. So we need diversification and asset allocation, because we want stability on the journey, different asset classes perform in different markets, so we want that mix. So the first one that I think everybody should be in, and it's the easiest one, and it's the one where you can use many tax allowances that the government gives you, is our stocks and shares. And basically, you're just owning a share in great business around the world. Super easy. You do it from your phone. For those of you in the UK listening to it, you have your friggin' ISA. It is the sexiest friggin' account you can have. But most people think their ISA is like a water jug. So they go and get a cash ISA. It's one of the sexiest investment accounts you can have. And they put water in it. and then they do nothing with it. It's like getting an electric kettle and then you never plug it in. You do not want a freaking cash ISA. You need stocks and shares because effectively you're protecting, you've got amazing tax allowance. Costs are one of the biggest things that can impact our investments. So stocks and shares, super straightforward, really easy to do. Index brackets, I have a masterclass on that. You can read it in the Whale Shape, but you can do that. You can set it up on autopilot. So I really believe everybody should get this in, and this becomes the automatic, unconscious, happens automation, because our wealth, our health is created by our habits. And this is key to set that regular investing. And that's why I love that asset class. Easy access, very low cost. You can start with £25 in your eyes. That really there is, because it's the habit. Then absolutely, real estate is, I call it, you know, wealth Play-Doh. There are so many assets and things you can do with that. So building on your stocks and shares, then go into real estate. And, you know, there's three key ways you can do real estate. You can do it through a fund, through a real estate investment trust in your ISA, in your SIP, in your property. You can do it direct. And that is fantastic for leverage. So real estate is the easiest asset class to use other people's money. And this is when you really start understanding, which, you know, is the power of leverage. This is how you now take a 8% return and turn it into a 40% return. You know, there's so many things I want to share with you, but really, when it comes to wealth creation, there's only three things we have: the time to let compounding work, the money we can put in, the seed money, and then the rate at which we can get those assets working. So, you know, if you want a shorter period of time to get there, or maybe you've left it a bit late, you've maybe don't have loads of money to put in, then you need to get those assets working harder. And then using leverage, using strategies like that, is really rocket fuel for the wealth.
I've watched some of your courses and I would absolutely recommend anybody to watch those. I found the index funds really interesting. And now I've got a background in the city and my background was in funds. But funnily enough, what I found from all my years in the city was I became very disillusioned with the with the industry. So I my chosen one was property, and now actually over the past few years, funnily enough, now I'm out of the city, I'm much more interested in the stocks and shares. But and I think part of that was it was certainly in my time very much a male dominated industry. They complicate with language. I mean, you know, to simplify what a stock is, what a share is, like you say, it's a piece of a company, and they make it so complicated. And I don't know if part of that is deliberate, but part of that is you have to seek a professional.
And let's face it, as humans, there's this little part of us, there's a little part of me still that I have to go, it's okay, sweetie, who desperately wants there to be a knight in shining armor, who's going to come in on the horse and go, oh, look, don't worry, love. You go play with the unicorns and I'll look after all of this stuff, you know? And so this financial aspect, because one of the number one fear of most women is ending up destitute, financially destitute, and not having enough. And 2 out of 3 women in the world will have to depend on the charity of somebody else to survive, let alone thrive. These are the realities. And so there is huge fear and anxiety. And there's then this next layer of, well, if I can just trust somebody else, almost that relief of somebody else. So if you can perpetuate the fear, most of financial products are sold on fear. Insurance and fear and away from motivation is a great sales strategy. People buy far more than towards. And so you've got these interwoven elements that we have to go, oh, okay, hang on. What is real and what's not real? We are far more loss avoidant. You know, if we understand behavioral economics. And so it's an industry that has thrived on that. But then they also believe their own press. And so when we also look at the bullshit income and salaries that are paid to industry where actively managed funds fail to beat the market most of the time. It's really is the ultimate emperor's new clothes industry. It's an industry that thrives on its own ego.
Let's just talk about that a little bit, Anne, because I was certainly party to this, you know, having been, and a lot of people who are in corporate jobs will have a certain amount of a percentage of their salary that they'll be putting into a pension. Yeah. Now, I actually didn't put a lot into my pension at the time because I was investing in property. And then the last few years, I thought, well, now I've got the properties, I can also put into a pension. And it wasn't till I came out and I took it out of the sort of pension and started looking at it at myself, but realizing the fees that were actually happening this, you know, before I hadn't even looked at it.
Let's get real, you know, size matters. So what do I mean? You know, the challenge is, again, our ability to understand compounding and exponential thoughts. And also it can be one of these things, oh, I get it, we're busy, our lives are full on. So if we believe that there's a supposed professional who's doing it, they go, don't worry your pretty little head, put it in this, and we, all the lovely banners and brochures, and it's the Phoenix Rising Success Fund, and we go, wow, that sounds impressive, we're gonna have a fucking clue what it means or what it's invested in, but whew, thank God I'm in that, you know. And there's a lot of elitism and status, that's all of the things that trigger humans that to want to go first. So now we've outsourced that. And then we look and somebody says, you know, well, what fees are being charged? And you go, oh, no, don't worry. And the financial advisor is only charging me 1%. Okay, what about the underlying funds? What are the ongoing charges? What do you mean they charge? Yes, it's charges. Go and have a look. Okay. Well, if people can find it on the fund fact sheet, they say, oh, no, it's small. It's between 3% and 5%. We don't understand what that 1% means. So here, everybody, understand this. If you've got £10,000, you've been on here and you've listened to Sonia and Anne, and you go, okay, shit, I'm going to get savvy. It's not so scary. Let's claim that back. I've got £10,000. I'm going to put it into an index tracker with almost no cost, no charges. Your money works for you, not for the industry. So under 1% of these ongoing charges. After 20 years at an average market return, I'll come back to what that'll be worth. But if you go, oh, I'm too busy, too scary, yes, but I'm too busy trying to work hard for money, I'm going to trust that industry and hand it over. And you're in an average actively managed fund via financial advisor, generally you're going to be charging about 2.5% more. So I'm not even going to take it to the higher end when you come to company pensions and all of those fees. A 2.5% differential over 20 years will end up in a 70% differential in the amount of money you end up. In the outsource scenario with that 2.5% fee on, could end up at about 50,000 quid, that 10,000 grow a little bit. Versus if you just eliminate that 2.5%, you'll get 120,000 more. Now, this is the challenge, is trying to understand that differential cost. There's only a few things we can control. We can control our contributions, we can control our consistency in our investment, and we can control our costs. We can't control what politicians are going to do, what the markets are going to do, but the costs matter. And that's the difference of this difference. And that's why I just love index tracking. And I believe every single person should fire their financial advisor.
There's probably a lot of people sitting here going, well, I've lost a whole load of money in my pension. I'm too scared to take it out right now because it's actually lost money. I know mine's actually, you know, gone down, and I want to do something about it. And they're maybe fearful of sort of, well, gosh, if they're professionals and they're losing money, if I take it out, I'm going to lose even more.
And this is so key. So I'm so thrilled you brought it up, because we need to also differentiate when we're creating our wealth plan between assets where their capital value can go up and down. And so a lot of people misunderstand what is called risk in the investment world. It's just called volatility. Things, the capital value will go up and down, but the broad trend is always upwards, long term. So we have to differentiate, and we've also got to get a long game mindset in life. Again, we would look at health, we would look at our businesses, what is at side, and differentiate what's the money we need short term, what is the medium term and longer term? And they're going to behave in different ways. And so then when we truly understand, we're building up our base, our asset base. We want to buy assets. So think about that property. Think about a share in a company. When there's a sale and we're a net buyer, Because when we are accumulating our wealth, we are buyers of assets. We want them coming in. We want to get them as cheaply as possible. So people will kill each other, stampeding over each other on Black Friday to get the discount. But they will go, when the market goes down, they go, my God, this is terrible. We'll stay away. So there's this inverse, illogical side, because we're thinking in terms of the value in the moment, not understanding how we're buying assets at a discount. So the last few years, everybody who on net accumulates a wealth, it's been sales season, getting great companies for a low cost. Now, I've been financially free for 18 years. So what do I do? For those of you who are further along the side, you've got a lump. Well, how you manage your money is really key. So I have different portions. I intend to continue living a fantastic, friggin' juicy life, and my assets to keep growing. So I'm also thinking, yay, this money's going down. How can I accumulate? Where are opportunities? I've taken out the money that I need to feed on for the next 2-3 years because I'm planning ahead. I've broken out of this monthly ka-ching mentality of an earner. I go, oh, I've allocated the pots that I need to feed off. Now the rest, like wild horses, they must run, assets, run, go and do your thing. You know? So when it goes down and up, I go, oh, is there a buying opportunity? Otherwise, I just know that that's what the markets do. So when we start understanding how assets work, then there is no fear. And this is really important. This is where education, a little bit of knowledge goes so far. And this is where we come right back to, we are our most important asset. We have to keep growing our understanding of how the world works, how wealth works, how assets work, how we are, what do we want? It all comes back to us.
Now, if somebody was watching this, I'm asking this question because it was pertinent to me, I think a few months ago. Oh yes, but do you know what? I'm just not a trader. I don't have time to sit on my computer all day watching the little things go up and down, buy, sell, buy, sell, buy, sell. I just want someone else to do it.
This is so lovely. I feel like you're hitting all my wonderful hot buttons that I can rant on. You're doing this.
No, because they were all mine.
Absolutely, because this is also so, these nuances, and this is why it's so important to get into an environment where we can just have cool money conversations, because we don't know what we don't know. And we are fed so much bullshit from social media, from, you know, out there we'll be told our house is our biggest asset. No, it's not. It's your biggest liability. Okay, we need to understand these things. So the next key one is trading and investing. They are completely different things. So what I am talking about is investing. You create, you build, you own assets, you create a business, you create result income stream, you buy assets. They stay in your life. They become these wonderful gnomes that are working away crazy. They stay in your life. Trading, we don't give a shit whether it's a toilet roll, whether it's a pen or a pencil. Trading by its nature is a job. It's an activity where you're buying something for a certain amount of money and you're selling it for another, and you want to make a difference between it. Now, trading has its role. We already said having a job, being able to work is great. You and I are currently right now trading our time. Well, we're building assets because that's what a podcast is. But our energy, so that's trading. You trade in real estate. You might buy a property, do it up and flip it. So a flipping strategy is a trading strategy because you're wanting to make money from the action of buying and selling. Great. But now if you just consume that money, then you're going to stay in poverty. If you now reinvest that money and buy assets with it. So trading is a fantastic strategy to help you accelerate, get money into your asset drawer, to buy assets that you keep and hold. So I first created my base in stock market investing, and then I got into real estate like you. And I did investing and trading. So I would find properties that I could do up. I lived in them while I did them up. I did most of the work myself. You know, what are you prepared to do for your wealthy life? Most people say they want it, but they're not prepared to do the work. Yes, it does often come dressed in overalls.
And this passive income phrase as well. I'm afraid I'm realizing it's just not passive.
Completely. But now that is trading. So I would buy a property, do the work, flip it, take that capital. Now I would take a portion of that capital to reinvest in the next trading activity, and the other percentage I put into buying assets. So I also built up a portfolio of buy to let. So buy to let would be more your investments. Now you're keeping them and you're earning from the income. So when we're talking about the stock market, please know just about nobody makes money trading, except the person that sells you the trading course. Absolutely. It is one of the most devastating, rich bullshit stories, whether it's crypto trading, forex trading.
I've got swept up in it as well. I mean, I dabble in crypto. Well, I don't dabble. I'm actually now.
Yeah, investing.
Just hold the thing. Do not trade it. Yeah. But yes, you see it all the time. It's like that. You know, the new Instagram get rich is, you know, get rich quick. It was like get a course for 10,000. Now it's like,
become learned a trader. Learned this magic formula, and now we have the bot. And hey, now AI can help you do it. Don't fall for that shit. It's just that's like trying to, you know. That is, again, the buy the pill to lose the weight or build the muscle. No, you actually have to pitch up and do it yourself. So when we understand trading is not investing is really important. And that's why also I love the index tracker base. You literally, once you've set it up, I look at my base investment portfolio for 1 hour once a year. That's it. It's all automated. And you have to do it first. It's not trading. So great question there.
And what other asset classes would you say should people? So really stocks and shares.
Yeah.
And
so your three big ones, which will form the bulk of most people's portfolios, is first stocks. So owning shares, equity, real estate. So once intangible assets. So it's intangible. It's a share in a company. Real estate, which is tangible. That's bricks and mortars. And the third in this is fixed income. So what this is where loan instruments, you could be like the bank, you can lend people money. This whole asset class has exploded with basically past 2012, there's legislation changed, which allowed a lot of fractional investing platforms to create peer-to-peer lending, mezzanine lending in real estate. Hell, in the UK, you can even take £4,000 of your ISA allowance and put it into what's called innovative finance. And that is a loan instrument. You lend on that. And so you get what's called an interest back. So now this is where there's capital preservation, but you're only earning interest. So you understand these three different asset classes and where they fit in. Now you've got your smaller ones, which are more like flavor. You always want some cash. So you have cash in your portfolio, which again, when there's a buying opportunity, when there's a sale, you can be there. It also lets you just have shock absorbers. So you can respond to different things. You can rebalance. So that's your fourth. Then you add the small C's. So you can add some commodities if you want. So commodities are these are things that us humans need to live, whether they're industrial. So these are your steels, your consumables, everything from corn to fuels. Decide. And you can do it just through a simple fund. Commodities, again, can't generate income, but their price value will go up and down. So just these are things that bring flavor. You don't need them as a core part. But when we understand, these are these different elements. So you've got cash, commodities, crypto. Crypto is absolutely emerging as this new independent asset class. It's very speculative still. It's still very early days. So one of the things I teach is I call the investment pyramid. And you want a nice, big, broad asset base. It's all about the base, darling, as the song goes. And then you want it to be boring. You know, boring is beautiful. Let it be consistent. Let that be your index trackers, your broad market, real estate. And then you can get more speculative as you go up. But many people want to get rich quick, so they want the skyhook shit that goes at the top of the pyramid. But you can't put the cap on it if you don't have the base. So your crypto is in there. But also, again, as you said, understand the difference between investing versus trading. What are some core tokens, things like Ethereum, Bitcoin? But it should be a small percentage of your net worth. This is where you've got asymmetrical investing. So things that could have a great high return, you have a small amount. So now you start managing the risk. So we've got cryptos, commodities, then collectibles is the third C in that element. And this is art, vintage cars, comic books. Now, I don't choose to invest it all in collectibles because you need to know that sector very cleanly. And a lot of people get caught up, oh, and I bought a piece of art, it's an investment. I go, no, how do you know that world? Understand it's very fashion driven. It's very of the moment. Now, some people love it. And you know, if you're really interested in that comic book side of things, great. But again, a small percentage. And then you want some physical gold. Well, you want really protection. So precious metals, silver is way too volatile. Gold is really the only precious metal you want to consider bringing in. And it's absolutely a chaos hedge. It's for insurance. Gold's not really an asset like other assets. It can't grow in value and it can't generate income. It's a wealth preserver. It's not a wealth creator. And so it stabilizes it. So there you have it. Those are the three biggies and then five little bits of flavor that you can bring in.
Wow. And this is amazing. I think there is so much that people can learn from you. Tell me a little bit more about your courses and how people can really tap into
knowledge. They can sort of find and connect in with me on the Wealth Chef. So the Wealth Chef, because it's about how do you take this ingredient and
we'll put these links in.
Great. And I think and so I have two primary signature training, Financial Freedom University. We only open once a year, but it's this all singing and dancing. It's absolutely everything in there that covers all the strategies and all the asset classes, but also key things around understanding how do you manage your money day to day? How do you get out of debt? You know, we haven't spoken about this. You cannot be free if you've got consumer debt in your life. And that was the third sort of step, you know, once you know where you're going, build those assets. But you have to break free from debt. And this is a self-worth element. This is a deep worthiness side, but to make it fun as well. So element there. So I've got that big singing and dance training. There's also a training program, which is called Savvy Investor, which is really getting your index tracker base in place together with how can you build a simple portfolio like I've described, literally from your phone. You can own the world, you can from your phone using fractional investing and index tracker platforms, which is just so sexy of what we can do these days. But again, we're not taught, you know, how simple and easy it can be. And otherwise, there's the Wealth Chef book and lots of blogs and videos and YouTube channels. The bottom line is we have to make a choice. You know, freedom's a choice. It will never force itself on us. Being great with money is a choice and it's a learned skill. And like having a great relationship with anything in life, you've got to make a bit of space for it. It's not complicated, but it does need some consistency. It does need to be some learning. It does need to be a journey. And so just start small, one step, you know, half an hour a week. And now the fog starts lifting. It doesn't feel so scary. And that's when we go, I could do this shit.
And you may, and like I said at the beginning, you make it so much fun, easy to understand, and very enjoyable. So if you're out there thinking, oh my gosh, I can't think of anything worse than talking about money or thinking about money, actually you make it fun and lovely, and it's wonderful. I think we've got a little gift for our audience as well.
Yes,
on the money makeover.
We do. So there's a little video and a little snippet each day just to start with understanding what's your income statement, what's your balance sheet, simple investing, how to get started. So dive on in and just go, hey, who knows, you too could just be great with your money.
And again, we'll put the link down there. And I feel like I could talk to you absolutely all day. I just want a couple of final things. What does the future hold for you? Where do you see yourself in the next few years?
Well, you know, it's this wondrous thing of choice. And so I chose to come back and live in South Africa, and I have a beautiful home in the bush, and conservation is deeply important to me. And I just, again, you know, when we all get clear and right relationship, what do we want to do with the privilege of being great custodians to our money? And so I keep expanding my investments on wealth so I can contribute more. My cost of my lifestyle hasn't actually changed much in 10 years. And so I'm getting more and more involved in building up asset base and platforms to fund anti-poaching and conservation, because the wealth of our land, if there is no land, if there's no space and there's no viability for our wildlife and our land to live, you know, these are the elements of where can I contribute. So as my life becomes a little bit more, what's that wider purpose? My absolute base passion is helping people get into right relationship with money, because I see the impact. You know, we cannot not be liberated and not impact others to do the same. So that drive is huge for me. I'm getting really enjoying getting back on stages, which is lovely. COVID really impacted that. I mean, isn't this amazing we can do that? But also connecting more back into the corporate world, where people who are in employment, to break out of the possibility that, like, both you and I, we know the privilege of, we created our freedom while we were working for a salary. And I want to really rage a little bit about a lot of the shaming that happens on social media around working, that working is a bad thing. In fact, you know, I could never have had the career I had. I built railways around the world. No individual goes to build a friggin' railway. I had amazing projects and great stuff. But it's when we can do it from a place of being empowered. When I knew I was so much better, I could contribute so much better because I could pitch up at work and I could bring my voice. I could bring my thoughts because I wasn't scared of losing my job. It wasn't that I was an asshole. It's just, you're now no longer self-betraying. So these threads are some of the things, a lot more live speaking gigs. We're going to be back in the UK soon, definitely 2024. We're going to be having more live events. So mostly just loving my life. And yeah, you know, 5 years ago, I let go of a marriage that I'd then been in for 20 something years. And this was also a key step in going, what are those next layers? And it was with, I was so grateful that I could end that marriage with grace and kindness and compassion and make sure both of us were financially okay. You know, what a privilege. So also this aspect about relationships and for us women, understanding who we are sexually, emotionally, this liberation of that. And then I have now been in a new relationship for the last sort of 3 going on 4 years now. And I keep deepening these edges of what does that mean? What's that next layer of freedom of how do I be deeper and deeper in life? Because as you said, I think this is the journey that we get the privilege to have. I've got the space and the time and the energy to explore the wonder of being alive and what that means.
Anne, you're an absolutely fantastic woman. I've absolutely loved talking to you today, and you embody everything that resonates with me and that I stand for. Freedom, it is just, it's everything that you embody. I've loved this. I would love to meet you when you're next in London. Please do stay in touch. And once again, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
It's been such a privilege, and like you, I could talk all day, and I'm going to definitely look you up and we'll go and have a coffee.
Thank you for tuning into the show. Please subscribe and share. That would really help me get these valuable messages out.